Hello and welcome to the Care for the Family podcast with me, Mark Chester, Stephen Hayes,
hello,
and Rob Parsons.
Hi.
Today we're in the Dad Cave, where we discuss fatherhood in its various forms and where we get to unpack some of the things that don't often get talked about. Now, Rob, as the founder of Care for the Family, you've written many books on family life and fatherhood, and so it's great that you've joined us in the Dad Cave today. But before we look at today's topic, we always start off by each telling a dad joke. So do you want to kick us off, Rob?
Oh, yeah, I can do that very easily. I said to my wife the other day, darling, we're going to get rid of the Hoover. It's just collecting dust. That's pretty good. Not bad.
That's probably one of the better ones we've had in the Dad Cave.
Yeah, I think that is
all right, Mark. Yeah. So, I'm sat right here.
Yeah, settle the balance, Stephen. Come
okay.
On, tell us one of your jokes.
My friend keeps saying, cheer up, man. It could be worse. You could be stuck underground in a hole full of water. I know he means well.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's one of Stephen's better ones.
So, thanks very much.
This is mine. Okay, what's the most groundbreaking invention of all time?
JCB.
The shovel.
I got a confession with mine. If that joke won the Edinburgh Festival best one-liner for Tim Vine 3 years ago. Yeah, it's, so like, it's not really a dead
crime
joke,
on,
is it?
Crime in multi-story car parks. Wrong on so many levels. Maybe we should just
why don't we just keep doing jokes?
Let's get Tim Vine in. He could set the episode up, and then we can...
Yeah. It's fine, isn't it? All the best jokes are stolen. Okay.
Indeed.
So anyway, in this episode, we're talking about the busyness of life and whether it's ever possible to get those scales to level. Rob, I know this is something that you've learnt about the hard way. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience of when your children were young?
Well, I think what happened to us really was that I was from a very poor home. Dad was a postman, my mum was an office cleaner, and I had the chance to get into law, and this was just amazing for us. So suddenly I had the chance to try to become a lawyer, and I managed to become a lawyer, and I'm in this legal practice. We got married, we got a couple of kids, and I'm really trying hard to prove myself. I can't believe this has happened to me, and I also want to give my kids things that I didn't have, and I just got it wrong. I just worked long hours, not for the sake of anybody putting big pressure on me, just almost for myself. It was almost as if the long hours were saying to me, Rob, what a great job you're doing. But my marriage got in trouble, and I think my kids' lives were slipping through my fingers.
Yeah. I guess sometimes busyness can be a bit of a sort of certificate of achievement to us, can't it? We can be quite proud of our busyness sometimes, and that can create a lot of tension, can't it, within us?
Honestly, Mark, I could have often left the office at 5 o'clock, but it was as if something was saying, check that file one more time. What a great job you're doing. How would we ever get by without you? Mm. And they're deep lessons, but I'm so grateful that I learned some of those lessons while my children were very, very small.
So how did you learn those lessons, Rob? What brought you to the point where you thought, I need to change something?
Okay, so Katie might have been about 5 or 6 years old and perhaps Lloyd about 3. And Dan said to me one day, darling, I'm not sure I can do this any longer. And that was a...
That's going to startle you a little bit,
isn't
it?
That was a big thing.
Gosh.
And I said, whatever do you mean? And she said, well, you're just so busy, you're not here for us. And I noticed something else. Diane had long since given up trying to talk to me around the meal table, but 2 small children hadn't. And they'd be sharing their day with me, but I'd be on another planet. I'd made 50 phone calls out there, had another 50 to make that night, and I'd sit there almost comatose until the telephone rang. And I look back now and I can see all this as if I'm watching it in slow motion. And Katie or Lloyd would say, Daddy, it's for you, and suddenly I'd come alive. And it dawned on me that although in my own silly little way I was more successful than I'd ever dreamt of being, actually the things that mattered most were slipping through my fingers. Mm-hmm. And I realized if I didn't change, then life was going to get a whole lot harder.
Was there ever a sense when you were working those long hours that although I'm sure the challenges of work life were demanding and whatnot, but was there ever a sense that it was actually easier to stay in the office for a few hours? Because even now, I'll be totally honest, I can get to the end of a working day, and I know as soon as I get in, I love that time with my daughter, but there's no breathing space. So my commute home is 10 minutes,
yeah,
and then I'm straight into it. And actually, sometimes I think It's that battle where I think it'd probably be easier to just work for another hour, because it's at least then the compartmentalization of the different areas of your life. So I can come in like all stressed, oh, it's been a long day. Really, that last half an hour, I probably could have left it for the next day.
Yeah, no, I do think that was part of it, Stephen. But I think it might have even been deeper than that. It's almost as if my very identity was tied up in the job I did. And I suppose it was a bit like you say, because it was easier. Hey, it was a lot easier. Yeah. I was a partner, senior partner, a growing law practice. I could press the bell on my, somebody bring me a cup of coffee, somebody do this.
And that wouldn't happen at home.
You're doing this, you're doing that. But it was as if my very identity, but I don't think any of it was malicious.
Yeah.
I was saying to myself, I'm doing this for them. And do you know the real killer that struck me? And this changed everything. When I realized this one thing was wrong, it changed everything. I would say to myself, you know, a slower day's coming. Mm-hmm. Lockdown in life won't always be this busy. You know, when we've got that new office sorted out, when we've done this, when we've done that, we're going to have more time. And it doesn't matter whether you're a lawyer, an accountant, a candlestick maker, whatever. We've all got those tomorrows. Mm. Yeah. Sometimes it can even be in the home, you know, when we finish decorating, when we do this. And kids are suckers for the we'll do it later routine. Dad, we'll do it later. And when we say it, we mean it. Mm. But, of course, the day comes when they don't ask. And that was a big hit for me.
So you actually you noticed suddenly, you cognitively thought, my kids aren't asking me to do stuff anymore.
No, because but I realized that day was coming, perhaps when they were 13 or 14, 14 years old. I think realized that these opportunities were going. Do you know, when Kate was a little girl, she'd be about 4 years old, I'd be reading her a bedtime story and the phone would ring downstairs. We only had a phone then. And I'd say, I'll be back in a moment. Daddy, please don't go. No, I'll be back in a moment, Kate. And I'd take those stairs, like three at a time. And I'd take that phone call and then perhaps make another phone call. And then perhaps after 30 minutes, I'd remember I'd not finished the bedtime story. And I'd rush back upstairs. And guys, I'm telling you, as I go in my mind's eye now into that bedroom, I can see it all in stunning clarity. The light would still be on. And the book would be opened at the page where we'd left it, right by her head on the pillow. But little eyes had fought to stay awake as long as they possibly could. And I'll tell you what I don't understand about that. And I'm not saying this to boast in any way, but I've had an interesting life. I've written 30-odd books. I've lectured all over the world. I've been involved in murder trials. And all those things have had urgent phone calls attached to them. Ring her back, 2:30, this one's urgent. Do you know, guys, I can't remember one. Not one. Not in the middle of a murder trial, a publishing deadline, that couldn't have waited 10 minutes while I finished the bedtime story. Why did I make that choice? Why did I trade that? And when I began to realize that, lots of things began to change.
There's a new Coldplay album out at the moment, and one of the songs on there that kind of struck me was a song called Daddy, and it's very pretty, and I listened to it once and kind of felt impacted by it, and some of the lyrics that kind of tap into that stuff. And I think Chris Martin wrote it almost about as a child, but almost about himself, because he's off touring all the world. So the verses are, Daddy, are you out there? Daddy, won't you come and play? Daddy, do you not care? Is there nothing that you want to say? I know you're hurting too, but I need you, I do. Daddy, if you're out there, Daddy, all I want to say is you're so far away. Daddy, are you out there? Daddy, why'd you run away? Daddy, are you okay? Look, Dad, we've got the same hair. And Daddy, it's my birthday. But all I want to say is you're so far away. And that's like, hearing that as a new dad is like, I don't want that to be me.
And are there particular things that you think you'll do, Stephen, to avoid that being you? Because I'm conscious, Rob and I, it was a long time ago that we were parents of young children, but you're right in that now. So are there things that you're thinking, actually, I need to make sure I do this, habits that you need to get into?
Yeah, I think I've mentioned in other episodes, but I do try and carve out once a month. Every month we have a daddy-daughter date. So I take her out, just me and her, and we'll go for a coffee or whatever. And also, when I get home, it's kind of now the unspoken expectation that Beck is then free to do dinner, do chores, which is often feels like the easier thing sometimes, which is a real strange thing because I love spending time with my daughter, but then equally you're like, you're always on, you're always in the moment. Yeah. And I think perhaps some of the expectation of how dads engage now is different. So I read a statistic before, I think in the 60s, a survey was done and 3% of dads had changed the nappy, and that's now like 75%. So dads, I think in some ways are a lot more, or the expectation to be involved is they're a lot more. So I know that when I leave here, the second I'm in the door, it's like, right, I'm in now. Yeah. Until she goes to bed, I'm in the thick of it. Also, we're human, I'm tired, and there's so many other things going on that being involved straight away, then having time with Beck until she goes to bed, just means that I re-energize on my own, and that doesn't happen until very late in the evening.
Yeah. You know what, Steve? Most dads care. I rarely come across a dad that doesn't care. Mm. They love their kids. Mm. They would give their lives for them. And in that sense, it's not that we've been bad dads. It's just that life for many people is just busy. And it goes by a day at a time. Mm. I even noticed that with our grandchildren now. I can remember when I was in my early 30s, listening to a guy talk, he was a psychologist, and he read a line from that old song, Cats in the Cradle. Mm. My child arrived the other day, he came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay, he learned to walk when I was away. And he talks about what that psychologist called the closing door of childhood. That closing door. Do you know, for me, I spoke a moment ago about reading bedtime stories with Katie. Those times ended. Mm. I can remember I used to sing a bedtime song to Lloyd. He used to hate me singing, but it extended bedtime, so he'd let me do it. And my mother used to sing it to me. And one night, as I began to sing this song to him, he said, "Don't." And I said, "Why? We had done this for years." He said, "Because it's babyish." Do you know what that little boy was saying? "Dad, I love you, and we got some great times ahead. Mm. I am serving notice on you tonight that door of childhood has closed now. And when it does, wow. No power on earth can open it again." And it's why I wrote the 60-Minute Father. It's why we talk about it in Care for the Family. Not that there are bad dads out there. There are great dads. Mm. But I meet many fathers who look back and say, why did I do it? Why did I trade it for even a game of golf sometimes? Yeah. You know, we all want that kind of thing. But those choices and the reality of how it pans out.
You know, that reminds me of when my daughter was little and I used to read her a bedtime story and my wife would do the same, Sue would do the same, but then Sue would often sing to her. And then I was reading a bedtime story one night, we finished, and then Meg said, "Dad, will you sing to me?" Now, I am really not a singer. I am a terrible singer.
So maybe we should be the judges of that, Mark.
Definitely not. Absolutely you could no
both,
chance.
You could both sing your bedtime stories.
Trust me, I've heard him sing.
Well, okay.
Yeah. So I sang, I can't remember, it was a lullaby or something that I knew, and that was the only thing I knew. So I sang that to her. Then she said, "Dad, will you sing me another song?" It's like, "Well, I don't know other songs." She said, "Well, I want you to sing me another song." And the only thing I could think to sing her was, "Are You Lonesome Tonight?" Elvis Presley's "Are You Lonesome Tonight?" So I ended up sat there singing it, "Are You Lonesome Tonight?" including the talky bit in the middle.
But wow.
She never asked me to sing again, funnily enough.
Well, yeah, that's a good way of going about it, isn't it? It's true, though, isn't it? That kind of, although my daughter is, you know, 10 months old, that door to childhood thing, I've noticed it with my nieces. So my brother and sister-in-law, they've got Jess, who's 8, Felicity, who's 6, Zach, who's 4. And when Jess was about 2, I'd say, "Jess, come here." She'd give me a hug for about a second. I'd say, "Jess, that's not long enough." And she's like, "Oh, okay." I'd say, "How long do you want a hug for?" She'd say, "An hour." And I'd be like, "Okay." And then we'd do like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and hug for a little bit longer. Mm. Then I'd come in the door and say, "Jess, how long should we hug for?" 1,000 hours. And I think, okay. And then we'd hug. And that's just been a thing I've done with Jess. And I have little things with my other niece and nephew as well. And a couple of weeks ago, I said, "How long do you want to hug for, Jess?" And she said, "Why do you always ask that?" And I thought,
wow.
All those things you've said, Rob, it's like, even with her, it was like, oh, man.
But here's a great trick with little ones. I use it now with the grandkids. They come up and I say, "This kid gives the biggest hugs in the world. You go and scour the whole world. You will not find a kid that can hug longer than this kid. Honestly, sometimes they're stuck to you for about an hour. They're just trying to prove themselves. But you know, the interesting thing, I think, guys, is sometimes you can't give your kids all the time you want to give them. You can't. If you want to put bread on the table, you sometimes have to work long hours. I remember after I wrote The 60 Minute Father, a long-distance lorry driver wrote to me. And he said, Rob, thanks for the book. I found it helpful. But you know what? At the moment, life's tough for us financially. And if I want bread on the table, I got to be out driving that lorry more hours than I'd want to be. Mm-hmm. But I let my kids know in a dozen ways I'd rather be with them. I phone them. It was pre-social media. I write them letters. And then more importantly, he said, and when I am with them, I let them know I'd rather be with them than anybody else on the face of the earth. And you know what I've discovered? A child can more easily handle a father who they know has to be away but would rather be with them than sometimes a guy who's around 24 hours a day but in his heart and mind is always somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And you know, part of being a good parent is providing for your kids, isn't it? Part of being a good dad is helping to provide for your children, is to keep them warm and well-fed and shelter. Yeah. And so that is a necessary part of life. But, you know, you mentioned The 60-Minute Father there, Rob, and you wrote that 25 years ago this year. And it's a fantastic book. It had a huge impact on me as a father and working in the area of fatherhood as well. Mm. One of the things I remember from the book and that I used to do, you suggested that when you go away, have to be away with work, write a letter to your children. Yeah. So every time I went away when they were young, I'd like write a little note to each child and leave it on their pillow so that they'd get it before they went to bed. So the last thing they did was write that letter.
Yeah.
So it's suggestions like that. It had a massive impact on me.
At what point in your fatherhood would that have been then?
So that would have been, I can't remember exactly, but it would have been early years. So they would have been sort of toddler age, early years of school. And it probably went on for most of their primary school. But there did come a day where it stopped, where it would have felt a bit strange. You know, they're 22 and 18 now. So if I was writing them letters every time I was away with work, they'd probably be dad.
Yeah. But you know, the fascinating thing these days about letters is because the only letters we tend to get are kind of circulars or junk mail or what have you because of email. A letter's really special. Mm. So for a dad to actually write and post a letter. I went to watch my daughter Lily the other day in a ballet. She was in Swan Lake. First time she'd ever done a
pop. Your granddaughter.
My granddaughter in Swan Lake, little Lily. And I went home and I wrote her. I hand wrote her a letter. I licked the envelope, put a stamp on it and posted. Boy, I go into her bedroom and she has stuck this letter to the glass. Oh. And all those things say, you are special to me. You know, I've made lots of mistakes as a father, and I wrote about many of them in The 60 Minute Father. Mm. But I think I must have got something right because one day, not too long ago, Katie, who's the least arrogant, she's my daughter, she's the least arrogant woman you'd come across, she said to me, you know what, Dad? When I walk into a room, I feel pretty confident I can get by and hold my own and I began to think, why is that? I'm not naturally a kind of very confident person in that sense. And I realized that the first man in my life made me feel special. Mm. And I think it's the greatest compliment I've ever had because I have made many mistakes. But as I look back, I think of those nights when we used to, when she was about 12 or 13, once a week we'd have a Coca-Cola in a little foyer of a hotel together and we'd talk. You look nice in that, Katie. What's your opinion? And, you know, it went so well with Katie because Katie could talk from that. I tried it with Lloyd when he was 13. Disaster. It was horrible to watch. He drank his Coke within 10 seconds. Let's talk, Lloyd, about what? I'd be dragging syllable after syllable. I almost gave up. And then I found a hotel with a pool table in it. Now we needed me to feed the 50 pences in. And you know, guys, you're going to laugh at me for this and you probably won't believe me, but it is true. When that kid was 19, 20 years old, he'd sometimes come into our bedroom 11 o'clock at night and he'd wake me up and he'd say, Dad, and he'd say, do you fancy going for a curry? You can get a curry in Cardiff at like 1 o'clock in the morning. I can tell you 99 times out of 100, probably 100, I've climbed out of bed, got into a pair of jeans I've eaten chicken tikka masala at midnight more times than you've had cooked dinners. But the seeds of that were when they were small.
Yeah. What's changed over the years for dads, do you think, guys, in terms of sort of distractions and busyness? What new distractions and that contribute to the busyness of life are there around now that perhaps weren't around, Rob, when you and I had had young children?
Yeah.
The obvious one is social media, smartphones and the rest of it, because most of us wouldn't want to admit that we're semi-addicted to these things, but most of us are. And so I think even now, I'm kind of, me and Beck are having to have those conversations already about, you know, how we, because we kind of said, when she gets older, we'll need to start getting more disciplined. But actually, she's now looking over at what we're doing on the phones, and she wants to hold it. She wants to engage with what we're doing. We bought her a little, which I said we'd never do, but we caved so quickly, a fake smartphone, basically, which you press buttons and it makes little noises. And she knows the difference. She's not interested at all. So it might be that in the morning, I'll make a cup of tea, bring her in and sit her in the middle of us, bring her a toy or what have you. And if we're both sat on our phones, then she's already, at least at subconscious level, taking that in and seeing that we're not giving her our attention. So, yeah, we're having to figure that out pretty quickly. And, yeah, thinking about, you know, stuff about you working a lot and being away and how you navigate that stuff. We've now got a different thing where there might be more dads who are physically present but maybe absent because they're checking their emails on their phone. They're not in the office, but... And everything else you can do on a smartphone, it's kind of hard to avoid, really.
Yeah, and you've seen that change, haven't you, Rob?
Yeah, do you know when I wrote the 60 Minute Father, there was a big push to encourage fathers to spend more time with their kids, and then I think we went through a period and are still in it where dads are incredibly involved. But what's changed in more recent years, I think, is what Stephen says. The smartphone. I spoke to a dad some time ago, and he's not with his kids. He's with his kids now, not living with them anyway. And he said, I look back on the time I spent gazing at that phone, and I think, well, what did I look at? I watched some news. I watched funny videos of kittens going up and down stairs. I did it. And I can't believe that I swapped that for building a Lego thing and doing it. I just gazed at this thing. And actually, that dad now, in the time he does have with his kids, which is not very much, probably has incredibly deep interaction with them. Mm. But boy, it's a struggle, and boy, it's a pain. I can remember Diane saying to me a couple of years ago, she said, we were watching television together, and she said, what are you doing on that phone? I said, I'm fine, I'm watching the program. She said, you're not present. Mm. And I think that's the thing. We've managed to invent something that while we are in the same room, distances us often from those we love for the sake of what?
Mm-hmm. Mm. So what can dads do to sort of counteract that, really? Stephen, have you got ideas? Because you're in this situation now. Mm. What kind of things are you doing to try and not get sucked into social media at times when it's not appropriate?
I think it's helpful if you're in a relationship that you kind of keep each other accountable.
Right.
So, you know, I'll be forever saying, well, what are you looking at, babe? Or, you know, to Beck. And she's just absentmindedly just kind of doing nothing, really. And she'll do the same with me. So I think being aware of it is kind of the main is the starting point. Being aware that it's not necessarily a good thing to constantly be on your phone, putting if we're watching a movie, the three of us putting our phones in a different place so that we're not tempted to keep using them. I suppose you don't want to vilify technology, because it's reality, isn't it? So even when I take her out, we do a little selfie every time, because I think when she's older, that'll be lovely to see once a month, me and her, as she gets older and I get more haggard and she gets more pretty and all the rest of it, that'll be lovely for her. So there's a, you know, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have just had a camera with you at all times. So that's a great thing. And we've got an Instagram channel that only me and Beck have access to, where, because, you know, each to their own, but I struggle when people post constant pictures of their kids. Mm. Once in a blue moon, fine, but I do struggle when it's like 7 times a day. But we post that kind of stuff on an Instagram channel that's for her, just for her. Only we have access to it. Other people have asked to see it and we reject it because we want her to kind of see that journey of what we were doing. And I'd love to have some of that stuff of when I was a kid. I think I've got, there might be 2 videos of me when I was pre-10. So all of that's great, but equally it can be a massive distraction and it can say to your kids, this matters more than you do. So you have to find that balance. And of course, Care for the Family's got a whole multitude of things that kind of tap into that stuff. So I might be more aware than the average person, perhaps. Yeah. How about you? Because you talk to dads all the time. What, how have you seen the change?
Yeah, I mean, I like the point that you're making that, you know, phones are not, smartphones, social media are not intrinsically wrong. Mm. It's how we use them. And and the same about work. You know, work's good. Work's a good thing. Yeah. Work enhances our life, but it's about getting balance, isn't it? Smartphones, social media, they can enhance our life, but it's about getting the balance. I think, yeah, they're tempting, aren't they? They do draw you in. You know, I find myself drawn. I was just saying to someone this morning, you know, I go through a phase where I think, right, I'm going to disengage from this phone for a while. And I managed to do it for a while. And then I find myself slowly, the first thing I check when I wake up in the morning, BBC News, straight onto it immediately.
Yeah.
And then after a week of doing that, I think, what am I doing? I need to, you know, stop. So I think it's constantly checking that. But I think there are challenges for dads. You know, I hear stories of dads saying that their children have said, you love your smartphone more than you love me.
Yeah.
You spend more time with your smartphone more than the time that you spend with me. So I guess it's just like anything else. It's trying to keep it in balance and using it to enhance family life, not detract from family life.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering about is, we've talked about some of the changes for fathers, and it is a great time for fathers. Fathers are expected to get involved in family life perhaps more than ever. I'm just wondering about sort of burnout for dads. Actually, are dads balancing a lot of priorities, trying to be great fathers, trying to work full time, lots of demands in work, lots of demands at home, lots of demands placed on them from the constant connection to the world through their smartphones.
Yes.
Is it a time of great pressure for dads? Are dads getting burnt out?
I think the honest truth is that life is busy. And you're absolutely right to say that the technology is generally a good thing. But it is an enigma, isn't it, that we live in an age where we have more technology than ever, more communication than ever, and yet we suffer in the area of emotional well-being more than ever. We often believe that we live isolated lives. So without doubt, there is pressure on. The incredible thing, though, I think, for dads, and I certainly found this, is sometimes relatively small changes can affect our lives in incredible ways. And the reason I think it's good to do podcasts like this or occasionally read a book on it or talk to a friend is that it can literally turn a light on. I heard a story, a lovely story of a guy that went to see an old man and he was sharing with this old man. He said, look, he said, I've been married for 10 years now. We've got 2 small kids and I don't have much time to spend with them, but I'm doing it to build up stuff for them. And the old man said, let me show you something. And the old boy went out and he brought in a big glass bowl. And he said, I decided when I was married that I was going to fill this with enough marbles to cover every Saturday of my kids' 18 lives. So all those marbles going 18 times 52 or whatever, all those marbles went in. And every Saturday I would take one out. And then he said some time ago the bowl was empty. And he said, that day was remarkable for me.
It's taking all that stuff, isn't it, of making sure you're getting the most time, building your relationship with your kids. But I think, and going back to your question, Mark, I think I think the real truthful answer is it's very difficult for guys and for dads to find time to re-energize, to do the stuff that gives you kind of joy. And you know, a typical day might be an hour at home in the morning, have a cup of tea and some breakfast with Beck and Imogen, come to work, leave at five or so, get home, 2 hours. It's like an hour and a half then before we start bedtime, and then she's in bed at seven. Bit of time with Beck, maybe 2 hours, watch a film, do a bit of reading, what have you. And then half nine, Beck would go to bed. And that's kind of like, often I'm really tired at half nine and I think I could be going to bed now, but I'll use that time to, you know, do some exercise, do some reading, because I need that time to, and I truthfully go to bed too late pretty much every night. Half 11-ish, maybe 12. But I feel like I need that time, and I sacrifice a few hours of sleep because I need that time by myself to, that's how I personally re-energize. And I think, you know, you said little changes make a big difference. It's kind of looking at your day and thinking, you know, where is there space? So even when I'm making that cup of tea in the morning, I'm kind of using that time to think about the day, to you know, weigh up what I've got on. And I think that just looks different for different people.
I would say, you know what, Stephen, be careful about that going to bed late thing. Because what you do is, okay, you come home, you got a couple of hours with your daughter, that's wonderful. And then you got a bit of time with your wife, and then she goes up early and you go up late. And that's okay, but you don't want to make a habit of that. You don't want to get into a lifestyle of that. And it's not that it's a bad thing, but don't do it every
night. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Do you understand? It's because, again, you look back on these times, and sometimes just lying in bed together, even when we're not asleep, is sometimes a good thing.
It's getting that
balance. What do I do?
So what do you do to look after yourself, Rob? Yeah.
Oh, gosh, you know, I'm not the greatest advocate for this. I try and walk a bit. I run a bit, play a bit of snooker. I read. Most mornings, I have a bit of time to myself in my study. I think, I pray a little bit, I have a cup of coffee, and I just begin my day like that. And that brings me a sense of perspective, I think.
Yeah. Okay, guys, so we're drawing to a close now. What's the one piece of advice you'd give to dads about getting balance in life? Rob, how about yourself? What would your piece of advice to dads be?
Do you know, when they analysed the phone calls made on September 11, just after the Twin Towers were hit, They listened to messages left on answer phone machines. They reread emails hurriedly sent from the burning towers. They listened to messages sent from the mobile phones and the doomed planes on that incredible day. The same three words came up time and time again. None of those words described share prices or bonuses or size of car driven or salary. No, 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 no. Lovers said them to lovers, husbands to wives, parents to children. Time and time again, as those analysts listened, they heard these three words, I love you. I love you. Because when it comes down to it, nothing matters like relationships. But in the busyness of life, we sometimes forget that. We think we'll have time tomorrow. So the real trick, I think, is to realize that the most precious asset really is time. And to use it wisely. We can't always give our family all the time we'd want to. But the years go by very, very quickly.
Rob, thank you for joining Stephen and me in the Dad Cave today. It's been great fun chatting with you, and we've really appreciated your wisdom. Congratulations on 25 years of the 60 Minute Father.
How about that?
And and we hope to welcome you back in the Dad Cave again soon. So thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll listen next time we're in the Dad Cave.